Chapter 4. Now that the hospital afforded him many occasions to practice virtues, they shone in him with new splendor. Forgetful of sleep and weariness, he watched day and night at the bedside of the poor. He did not feel his own fatigues, but only the pains of his dear patients, giving them medicines and care with more than motherly affection. Here our Lord commenced to show him the rich mines of the virtue of charity, and he began to enrich himself with its treasures. He learned to sympathize with the poor sufferer, confined to a painful bed, whose only relief and consolation are the loving kindness of his nurse. He caressed the weak, encouraged the feeble, associated himself with the lonely, entertained and consoled the sorrowful, and devoted himself with extreme diligence to the necessities of all. Having fulfilled these obligations, he spent the rest of his time in study and prayer, paying to each of them so much attention that, with the grace of God and his brilliant mind, in a short time, and his brilliant mind, he made wonderful progress both in prayer and learning. About his aptitude and love for studies, his brother, Francesco de Yepes, says, he was placed by his mother during the first school years in the College of Christian Doctrine. They taught him there to read and write, and in a very short time he learned both very well. Further on, he says, being there in the hospital, this gentleman, Don Alfonso Alvarez, asked him to make collections for the poor. This gentleman and all the other persons of the hospital loved him very much. They gave him leave to go and study Latin in the Jesuit college. His professor was Padre Bonificio, who is still living. He was so clever in his studies that, with the aid of God, he progressed rapidly in a very short time. They related in the hospital that looking for him in the night, often they could not find him, till at last they discovered him in the barn studying. In the Jesuit college he studied grammar and rhetoric, displaying exceptional capacity. Later on, in philosophy, his sagacity penetrated the most delicate subtleties of metaphysics. Beginning already at this time, he consecrated his learning to the knowledge of God and himself as related to God, which is the supremely legitimate use of learning. That part of philosophy which explains the nature and properties of the human soul he studied with greatest care, trying to understand well its functions and effects in our body, its faculties, the organs and senses through which it operates, and the manner of understanding in the present life, by means of the forms and likeness of things, called phantasms by the philosophers. He knew these studies would help him understand prayer and contemplation. His admirable writings, in which he makes use of rigid philosophical principles to explain with great preciseness the most intimate operations of the soul, both in ordinary prayer and in the highest supernatural communications with God, are a monument to his diligence as a student of philosophy. With the same eagerness and devotion he practiced mental prayer. From his earliest age, our Lord began to visit him with divine communications, giving him a foretaste of heavenly sweetness and light. He went to prayer as to a divine school, where the Sovereign Master enlightened his mind and moved his will to love heavenly things and despise the perishable goods of the earth, to know the beauty of virtue and the foulness of vice. It was in prayer that he learned to deny himself and mortify his senses, to distrust every sensible affection, and to be sober, having on the breastplate of faith and charity, and for a helmet the hope of salvation. The effects of his wonderful spiritual development were manifest in his acts and manner of living. He chastised his body, though innocent, with vigils, fastings, disciplines, and hair shirts. Not satisfied with the heavy work of assisting the sick at the hospital and many hours of prayer, when night came, he continued his efforts to pray. He struggled against the weakness of his body until he had thoroughly expelled drowsiness in order that prayer might be prolonged. When he was at last overcome by sleep, he mortified this solace with the hardness of his bed, which consisted of a heap of twigs. This penitential custom was observed in him as early as his 7th year. From the very moment of the use of his reason, he offered himself to the Lord, presenting his body as a living sacrifice, holy, pleasing unto God, his reasonable service, as St. Paul exhorts us in Romans chapter 12, verse 1. He practiced from that tender age what he had joined on others, many years later in the ascent of Mount Carmel. First of all, have a constant care and desire of imitating Christ in everything, conforming yourself to his life, which you must study well to know how to follow it, behave in all things like Christ himself. In this manner he printed in his soul the image of Christ our Lord, and in this divine and most brilliant mirror he studied how to order all his actions. At every step he questioned himself, if Christ our Lord was doing what I am going to do, and was in my state in life, and represented my person in office, how would he behave? How would he be and act on this occasion? How would he study? How would he attend Holy Mass? With what reverence and confidence would he devote himself to prayer? With what love and affection would he attend and nurse the sick? Be thou, O Lord, my master, he used to say, for thou art my model and pattern. Teach me what to do and how to do it, that I may conform all my actions with thy divine actions. Not with less confidence and affection did he consecrate himself to the Most Holy Virgin. Mindful of the favors he had received at her motherly hands, he tried to compensate her by unceasingly growing in devotion to her. He said the rosary and the little office daily on his knees, and remained long hours in her presence.